So is our next guest, Jerry Crichton. You all know Jerry Crichton from the Zoo programme. You'll also know his voice. In fact, I would say that even if you didn't know his name and you heard him on the radio, you'd say, that's the guy from the Zoo, because Jerry's voice is as distinctive as anus. His book, Raised by the Zoo, My Life with Elephants and Other Animals, was first published in September 2023. He spent a lot of his childhood in the zoo. His father was one of the keepers there. And then he followed in his dad's footsteps by becoming a keeper himself, where he spent a great deal of his working life with the elephants. So he knows a lot about elephants, and he cares deeply and passionately about elephants and feels we really have to look at how we keep them in captivity and, where possible, rewild them. He sat down with Richard Collins recently, and he began by talking to Richard about why he took that decision to leave Dublin Zoo.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people ask me, why did I leave Dublin Zoo? And, you know, it was a zoo obviously very close to my heart. I've been around it since I was a child. Jerry Sr., my father, was 52 years in the zoo. So I never remember anything except being in the zoo, going up at the weekends to the family farm when I was 3, 4, 5 years old, or Pets Corner, it was known in them days. So I couldn't wait then to leave school and get into the zoo, and I did. And then how I evolved over the next few years and to the point of being operations manager and leading the team at the zoo was wonderful. But I got to this crossroads, and elephants is what did it for me. The zoo was sending me around the world to help because of what we had done at Dublin Zoo. The then director, Leo Oostervegel, was very good. He sent me to many places to help them. But then I said, you know, maybe I could. It was obviously, there was a time element. I was using up time on Dublin Zoo, and I couldn't continue to do it because I was needed in the zoo. So I sat down, you know, with Leo and my own father, Jerry Sr., and asked for advice. What do you think? And he said, you know, really, they both were kind of unanimous in saying, you know, you've outgrown the role at Dublin Zoo. And I just wanted to make a difference, that passion to make a difference of the acquired knowledge that I had learned over the previous 3 decades. You know, because with elephants and other species, education is usually important. Of course it is, but you need acquired knowledge. You know, there's nothing like experience with how to approach an elephant, how to do foot care. So then I set up my own company, Global Elephant Care, 4 years ago, wondering would I get a job. The phone hasn't stopped ringing. The biggest projects in the world at the moment I've been involved in, the designing for the Melbourne Elephant House, they've been moved out to Werribee Open Range, the howlets, rewilding. Imagine rewilding elephants going back to Africa. What a dream. You know, I'm working in San Diego Zoo, one of the more foremost zoos in the world, has now brought me in as a consultant too. Like, you know, I could have never imagined in my wildest dream. And it's my philosophy. It's my philosophy about, you know, looking at the animal, looking at the elephant, looking at their family, how they live, and making a difference. And I just want to go anywhere I get a call, I'll be, and I'll be there to help the elephants. And, you know, just, you know, because I understand their empathy, their emotional intelligence. And I really understand the injustice that we have done on hundreds of years with them. And if I can make a difference, but myself and others, that's what I want to do. That's my mission.
Jerry, you have here a formidable looking yoke, a hook, and about a metre long handle on it. How was that used with elephants?
Yes, this actual elephant guide or tool, as it was inappropriately called, has been used for thousands of years. And you can see at the top it has 2 points of pressure, or very sharp edges. So because you were sharing the space with the elephants, you had to be in total control. You had to be the dominant elephant. That started very early in the elephant's life, where its spirit was broken to conform to your rules. So the elephant understood, if I don't do something right, there's a consequence. It's essentially violence against an animal. But you could see here, this sharp point would be put behind the soft part of the elephant's ear, or on the inside of the egg. You can see the more curved hook that you're for getting the legs up or the feet up. So, you know, the animal would be fearful, and 9 times out of 10 the animal would do it without being prompted by the hook, because already in its early part of its life it would have been already shaped to understand that this is a dangerous weapon essentially, and conform or you feel pain.
Well, now you say you're controlling the elephant. Does that mean you're the matriarch in his eyes, or a bull, or what are you? What's your relationship as the elephant sees it?
It's complete dominance, complete control. A matriarch makes the correct decisions about an elephant herd for resources, for where to move, how to transport around locations. She makes all the correct decisions in the best interest in the of the herd. This was for us to become dominant elephants. It's still used to this day. You know, in zoos now, by 2030, EASA, which is the European Association Association of Zoos and of Aquariums has instructed all zoos in Europe to banish the hook and use positive reinforcement, or what we call protected contact, which means we do not no longer share the same space with the elephant. The elephant comes to what you call a training wall, and that's hence what comes in here with our target training stick, where the animal is rewarded. It has choice to participate or walk away. But my experience is wonderful. What happens is the elephant's always happy to participate because it's been rewarded for what it does. You know, and to quote Edmund Burke, you know, we can achieve far more with our kindness than we can with our force.
Jerry, now, nobody in this country knows more about elephants than you do, and you have been associated with them for decades. You must know them intimately, their ways intimately. Have you used hooks like this with them?
Absolutely. I inherited a situation from in Dublin Zoo where, you know, from the time elephants were in the zoo, was free contact. And we had to carry the hook because the elephant understood the consequence. And in them days, in the old days in Dublin Zoo, I'd be up there on my own in the house. And now, thankfully, with the elephants, I worked with Judy and Kirsty. I never had to use the hook. Right, but the point was, it wasn't because they had any wonderful relationship with me. Of course, we had a good understanding and we worked very well together under the old conditions. The point was, the elephants knew the consequence of the hook from previous generations. They knew that if they don't conform, the hook gets put into a, you know, a soft tissue spot and causes extreme pain. But for me, it was shattering because I used to go in the morning and one of the elephants, Kirsty, would actually urinate. This was in the 80s, and she urinated out of fear when she'd hear the key. And she'd say, because, you know, and obviously in the old days she would have been roughed up. And they would rough the elephants up regularly to remind them in zoos and so, you know, in elephant homelands, to remind them the consequences if you don't conform. So, but that's why, you know, I just said, we've got to change. It has to be a window change. I was never comfortable with it. I was never happy with it. And thankfully, now it's left in the past and we've moved on.
And presumably you need only show her the hook. You didn't actually prod her with it.
Exactly. That was the thing. It was the visual of the hook. You would carry it in your hand. You even see, you notice when if you look parades or circuses are in Thailand where they're still managing elephants, in, you would see it down discreetly by the side, but always close to the elephant. They would sometimes move it over to the opposite hand and then the elephant would realise, oh, I can relax. But yeah, it was essentially animals living under the threat of violence. Yeah, has no place in modern elephant management.
I have to confess that I went on elephants' backs in Corbett Park in India, and with the mahout, as he was called, he had a hook, a most ferocious thing than that.
Yeah.
And the elephant led us out into a herd of wild elephants. It was crazy. Yeah. One of these experiences you'll never forget. All these wild elephants around, and the mahout is there. But the elephant was very docile. Your man didn't have to use any hook or anything like that. You probably wouldn't approve of me doing that.
No. You see, the elephants, like the whole physiology and their shape, if you look at the spine is designed with the vertebrae go up. Mm-hmm. An elephant should not be bearing weight on its back. It's, it can put it into excruciation pain. If you ever look at the spine of a, we can look at the elephant later on and you can show you. So it should not be weight bearing. They're designed for pushing, knocking over trees, pulling trees, incredible power. Yeah. 100,000 muscle units in their trunk alone. Yeah. And they're powerful animals, but they should not be weight bearing. But the point is, you know, when you see this, when you see what you believe to be an elephant happy with people on its back, that is the end product of a dramatic, drastic process of breaking that elephant, taken away as a neonatal. In like certain countries, they actually put fires around them. They keep them awake for 4 or 5 days at a time by fires and waking them and hitting them. And this still happens to this day, to keep them awake. And the elephant becomes emotionally and physically bankrupt and just kind of says, not to be anthropomorphic, but here you go, do what you want with me now. Spirit is devastated and broken. So you have something that resembles an elephant. It's grey, it's trunk, but that's about it. All the natural repertoires, all the natural behaviours are suppressed. And when every time you come in the room, they're wondering what's going to happen next. It's horrible.
Now, the fellas out there in India told me that they are, in a sense, married. The mahout is actually married to the elephant. He's with the elephant all the time. They are in a relationship, a prolonged, stormy maybe, relationship. Yeah. But there is. Were you married many times to elephants?
Well, you know, the one thing about them is they're incredible. And the more you learn about them, and certainly what we created at Dublin Zoo, you know, in 2005, 2006 was very, very special. Like, we sat with the then director, Leo Oostervegel, Alan Rucroft, who was an international consultant, a man that's helped me greatly in my career. And we said, we have to break away from the shackles of the past, and we have to move forward with progressive thinking and allowing elephants to be elephants, elephants to invest less than one another. And when you see what they can do to one another when they're biologically related, where elephants teach in elephants. Remember, Jerry can't teach them anything about being an elephant. All I can do is manage them, which is what we did in free contact. But when you see them in protected contact, living as a family, investing in one another. Like, we had 9 births over 10 years in Dublin. It was remarkable to see a new elephant drop to the sand floor. Remember, I say sand floor, no more concrete floors. All the amniotic fluid absorbed. Baby elephants standing within 2 minutes. All the young females pushed in around the herd. The sights, the smells, the uniqueness of that moment. Their future being secured by that bird. The young bulls were always pushed out. They have nothing to offer. You know, when the young bull is different, he's biologically programmed to leave the herd when he's born. But to see them then being brought in when the calf is standing, and to see how he had evolved and changed. And what happened at Dublin Zoo resonated throughout the world. We had huge influence on how elephants were managed and are continued to manage them. So many people said, well, this is what we need to be doing. Kindness, respect. There was one particular elephant at Dublin, Bernardina, who, you know, people used to say, oh, she's a bad elephant. She came from the Netherlands with a history of looking to attack people. She was kept in, you know, she was managed at a different era. You know, it was done differently in them days, and you have to respect that, and thankfully we've evolved. But she was very much under free contact, and she rebelled. She didn't want the hook no more, and she tried to attack keepers, and she became an aggressive elephant. Remember, not a bad elephant. Bad decisions made at critical times in her life created this elephant. Humans created this elephant. So we got her to Dublin. And then again, immediately we brought her into what we call protected contact. As I mentioned, this is where I'm one side of a training wall. So when I say wall, just for people to visualise, it's actually a steel wall with opening ports for ears and for foot. And you stand there with your training stick. And Bernardina absolutely loved this process because she knew she was in control. The elephant can walk away if it wants, but it wants to participate because you're getting an apple, it's being rewarded, it's getting jackpots. She thrived as a mother, as a matriarch. No longer was she living under the shadow of a horrible hook. She was able to express herself, a mother, a matriarch, and it was just wonderful to see what the kindness did for her life.
Now, have individual elephants personalities? Some people are very highly strung and others are brave and couldn't care less. Yeah. Is it the same with elephants?
Absolutely. That's what fascinates me about them, Richard, is that personality difference. You know, in every herd, you've got the bold elephant, you've got the quiet elephant, you've got the extrovert, you've got the introvert. Like, I'm working with an incredible herd of elephants in the Alloyan Zoo in the Middle East at the moment, and there was a little female born there. She actually, remember, she was conceived in the wild and she was born in a zoo environment, and it's my mission to make sure her long-term life plan is one of meaningful life of as an elephant. But my daughter actually named her Mia Bahati, and Bahati is the Africana word for meaning she who brings happiness, and she did. When that elephant was born in the herd, how it just brought all the herd together, reinvested in it. The different personalities, the extroverts coming in, you know, wanting to play with the baby, the introverts, you know. And then even in the training repertoire, it's like having a classroom of children. And I don't mean to sound again anthropomorphic, but some of them learn really quickly. Some of them, you know, take much longer. So patience and kindness is the key. And as I say, when it's training, it's not. People must forget, and we're not talking about circus or gimmick training. We're talking about training for presentation of body parts that are critical for success in treating them in terms of blood sampling. I do a lot of pedicures. Like, in the wild, an elephant would travel vast distances. Because, you know, so in an environment when they're in human care, they get rich diets, probably too rich. We like to give them pellets and keep them happy so the nails grow. So you have to train them then to present their foot. So now I have these elephants doing this on a voluntary basis. Hold your foot there. They get washed. They get jackpots at the end, which is a bunch of bananas, and they're rewarded. And then when you're gone, they're literally coming after you. No, don't stop the training session. Positive reinforcement on their terms, their choices, their autonomy. Walk away if you want. But they always take the best option, which is to engage with Jerry and enjoy the training.
Well, now, is it consistent? Is there a risk with elephants? Can they suddenly, a docile one, suddenly go berserk or go become difficult overnight? Is it safe to be going up to elephants?
You see, what we have now, as I say, are protected contact walls. So there's even the angulation of the bars or go at certain angles. So if a trunk did come at you, it guides it away for you. We could talk a little bit about the design. But the design is that I can stand safely one side and the elephant the other. Of course, you know, any animal with empathy and emotional intelligence can have humour changes, can have mood changes. But as a good elephant carer, you observe this and you know. Now, the biggest thing that you would have to generally watch is must, which, you know, must is the massive surge in testosterone in a male elephant. Must is the Hindu word meaning intoxicated. Yes. In other words, the elephant goes on like it's drunk. They get a massive surge in testosterone. But interestingly enough, you can have a fabulous relationship with them. Upali, who was the breeding Asian bull elephant in Dublin Zoo for many years, very successful bull. Obviously, with the EEP, which is the breeding management people, suggested he goes to Le Pal Zoo in France. He went to Le Pal Zoo in France to continue his breeding. I got a call. I hadn't seen Upali in 3 years. The keepers rang me. They said, listen, Upali's not quite himself. He looks like he's having his, you know, his must, but he won't let us near his feet. And we want to do his feet. And I said, okay, can you come over, Jerry? I said, of course I can. I flew over to Le Pal. I walked into the bull house there. Upali looked at me. All of a sudden, this beautiful rumble started. Beautiful. And he came over straight over to the protected contact training fence, dropped down and looked at me. I thought, this is a well-documented story. I even have the videos of it. And then he looked at me, and the guys in the elephant house were saying, wow. I said, we had this understanding, this relationship. It wasn't that he loved me. It was an understanding that through kindness and the repertoire and how we trained was always based on his terms. I opened the footboard. I said, good boy, Upali, put your foot up. And he put the foot up, and I start doing his feet. Now, the next 3-4 days, I've got all his feet perfect and pristine, and the French elephant care team are saying, how does this happen? I said, it was an understanding. We had built a trust. And after 3 years, despite having not seen me, immediately identified what we were going to be doing and loved the process. It was a very, very special moment for me. And, you know, to coin the phrase, an elephant never forgets, he really showed it that day. So it was great to be able to help him and go over and see him. But that is the must is, getting back to your question, the must is the most dangerous point. And like any animal, you know, you can have females when they're cycling or Easter cycle, to be more accurate. You know, they behaviorally they can change, but it's about good observation. Like, for example, now we don't just rack up in the morning and say, let's hope that things are okay. Like, we have a science behind it. Like, for example, all the animals are watched under 24 hours on CCTVs. And the job I always give the elephant care team, anywhere we go, somebody watches the cameras for the first. Because it's about, the important thing is to know what happens when you're not there. It's easy when you're there. But, you know, and this is what we do now, and what I encourage everywhere I consult around the world is, the challenge is when you're not there. So when you go home at 5 o'clock and the elephant has 16 or 18 hours on its own, make sure it's dynamic. There's no magic fairy going to come in the middle of the night. Whatever way you leave it is as good as it gets for the elephant. So it's great. And now we have time feeders. We have access. We don't lock on them in anymore. They have choice to go in and out. Like, I seen a beautiful thing many years ago in Dublin Zoo. And traditionally, because, lock them in at night. This was always the mentality. But through all zoos, it wasn't just a Dublin Zoo thing. It was just a safe thing. Put them in, the big cats, the apes. And they went into these really small little spaces at night. But when we built the habitat for the elephants, that was appropriate, that we could say, of course they're going to be safe all overnight. And it was June or July. And anyway, an unbelievably electrical, unusual storm that we get in our climate. Electrical thunder, rain bashing and smashing down off the ground. Now, we've had it in the old days, and I knew that was coming. I'll lock the elephants in to be safe. We look back at the camera, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and there's all the elephants standing up looking towards all the rain as it pelted all over their body, and the thunder and lightning all around them. And then they went into the pools and swam. But why? Because they had choice. They had choice themselves. We go into the house or we go out here. But they made a choice. Which is, for Asian elephants, that wet environment is very normal. They love getting wet from rain and then getting into the pools. But the point is, I looked and says, wow, how wrong have I got it? The elephants made that choice themselves. So empowering animals to make decisions now is the way forward in terms of human care.
Now, elephants, I've read about them, and they claim they are active by night. They're crepuscular and then by night. But now you are locking them in at night. Shouldn't you reverse it around and let them free range at night and lock them in for 4 or 5 hours to sleep during the day?
We don't even do that. We give them the choices. But what we're finding now is, as I said, there can be behavioural differences depending on climatic, but they can be very active at night, but they also sleep quite a lot at night. Elephants will see, it's a very interesting subject too, and we've done a very extensive sleep study, one of our keepers, Brennan Walsh at Dublin Zoo, a couple of years ago, and we watched the elephants for 24 hours over the day, and the matriarch, which was Bernardina, would always sleep the less, no more than 2 or 3 hours at night, because her job is to stand there watching the herd, right down then to the youngest member, who would sleep for 5 or 6 hours. But never, ever would an elephant ever sleep for any more than 30, 40 minutes on one side, because of the size and the bulkiness of the body, they would have to keep displacing the weight. But nowadays, now, because of the comfort and having the environments that are correct, they'll sleep anytime. When they have a rest, they lie down. But it's all to do, remember, there was elephants in, not just Dublin, but zoos all over the world, that they used to have this mythical, you know, thing, oh, elephants can sleep standing up. No, elephants, like every animal, rest is critical for any animal, and particularly an animal that weighs, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 ton, depending. So by changing the substrates, where historically we kept them on concrete floor, which is an alien substrate, rotted their feet, urine, feces, abscesses, and I've treated abscesses in elephants, and it's horrible. But sand, like proper sand flooring that was used at Dublin Zoo and other zoos now around the world, has rejuvenated and created an incredible comfort for the elephants. I like to call it memory foam mattress for elephants. So we create these pillows. I call them sand pillows. And it's beautiful because you think of a tusked animal trying to lay down on a concrete floor, how its neck would be compromised. Now I watch and I see the big elephants, and particularly an ally in the African elephants, just so people know, both African, but male and female have tusks. In Asian, only the bull or Indian. Females, where they have tushes or small tushes, like I've just shown you on our little touch table there. So basically, you know, this sand has revolutionized how elephants are kept in human care. It absorbs the urine, and you create these pillows. And I have some pictures which I'd happily show you on my phone, which is amazing. Now, you come in the morning, you can see the whole print of the elephant on the sand. Mm. And it's the type of sand. It's not like builder sand. We use sand from an estuary of a river, which has round particles. So it's like the elephants, you know, sleeping on marbles, believe it or not. So this is how far we've gone with the advance of their comfort. And an animal that has had a good night's sleep or can rest when it wants is always going to be a happier. But I've seen it in zoos and around Europe and around the world, where I'd walk into a stall and I'd be able to tell the keepers, I'd say, this is where the elephant sleeps, or standing up, and they'd say, how would you know that? And I'd know by the forensic. I'd see a little worn patch in the middle of the wall, and I'd know that's where the head is lodged in between maybe two walls, so it can get rest, supporting itself. Horrible, wrong. But we're evolving, we're learning. And thankfully, there's a very significant window change for elephants in human care that, you know, is allowing them to work and live on their terms. And that's the critical ingredient.
Now, you mentioned moving an elephant to France, and I know the Dublin Zoo has moved them to America even.
Yes.
Now, you're up there and an elephant is to be moved.
Yeah.
Now, what do you do? Do you hire some firm that does this professionally? Do you give the elephant tranquilizers?
Yeah. Let me just give you a quick brief history on some of elephant moves can still happen and has happened where lack of resources are put into it, but I won't deal with that. Part of my company with Global Elephant Care is kindness is the only way we'll do it. And what they would do and have done and are still doing in certain situations is they winch elephants in. Let me explain what that means. They would sedate the elephant to the point where you could go in and stand there. It's called a standing sedation. They would then put a chain bracelet on the elephant, and then you have a winch and you pull the elephant in screaming. That's the bottom line. They come in with screaming and full
screaming.
Of screaming.
The elephant is screaming.
Because
even though he's sedated.
You know, you have to reverse the sedation to make the move. You have them sedated to put these chains on them safely.
Then.
So then they're winched in using a mechanical winch. So recently, just to bring things into perspective, I get a call from Belfast Zoo. And Belfast Zoo rang me. Said, Jerry, we've got two beautiful elephants. I know them for a long time, Yeto and Dunya. They both had serious bone issues from the previous history. Belfast done an amazing job and took them on, you know, their later years to give them a life. But Belfast quite rightly said our facilities can no longer support geriatric elephants. So there's a zoo, Burger Zoo in the Netherlands, which can and has a facility specifically for geriatric elephants for kindness and care. So they called me up and they said, Jerry, we need to get these two elephants into a box. Now, we'd like to do it, travel crate. We'd like to do it fairly soon. I said, okay, let me have a look. So anyway, we brought in a company called Akipa, and they gave us the crates. And I said, I'll do it with you, Belfast, on one deal. If I don't succeed after 6 or 7 weeks, we wait till next year and you give me more time, because it's a fairly short time frame. But we don't winch. And Belfast were absolutely not a chance of us going to winch these elephants. But I said, listen, it's important that we know. These elephants had bone defects and walked really uncomfortably and very sad lives, you know, in human care between the circus and the logging camp. Belfast, as I say, had done a tremendous job. I started training them. I brought some of the keepers up from Dublin Zoo to help and support me. My daughter was up there. Anyway, I said, after the first week, I'll tell you whether we're having a success. The elephants would come out sometimes in the morning. It would take them 40, 50 minutes to walk maybe 10, 12 metres because it was an old environment. And although the keepers did our very, very best, it was no longer suitable for elephants. Anyway, I started introducing the target sticks and the reward-based training. So after about a week, the elephants would literally, old girls in their 50s, but they would come out as fast as they could. Oh, Jerry's here with the rewards and the training and the system. After the second week, Alan Cairns was a very compassionate man and wanted the very best for his elephant team. And the elephant said, how do you think we are? I said, we're doing okay. Give me another week and I'll tell you for sure next week. And the elephants just loved the response to the kindness and understanding the process. One of the elephants I had to train to reverse into the crate, would you believe, so she wouldn't be sitting over the exhaust when she was on the truck. But after 7-8 weeks of pure kindness, both elephants on the day walked in. I actually trained them. They had to have a bracelet on their leg because by law, so they can't try turn or swing. But I use now a strapping bracelet, no more chains. It's like a big belt, like you would have around your waist. They have it, so it's kind. But after 7 weeks using, you know, kindness and reward-based training and giving them a choice, on the day of loading, both elephants went into the crate with no problem at all, and we brought them off to the Netherlands, where they're now being introduced to two females there. So a brilliant story showing you that you can do it correctly.
Jerry, talking to you has been fantastic. It's wonderful. The information, the wealth, the vision it opens up is extraordinary.
Thank you, Richard, and I'm really happy to be able to go around the world and help these elephants in any situation wherever I can.
Jerry Creighton speaking with our own Richard Collins. That's pretty much all we have time for tonight. My thanks to all of our panel and everybody who took part in the programme, not forgetting our researcher, Michelle Brown. We'll do it all again at the same time next week. Until then, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Mooney Goes Wild is presented and produced by Derek Mooney.
Email mooney@rte.ie.